Welcome to River Life Podcasts. We're a church family embracing the Father's presence, releasing empowered people to declare and demonstrate Christ's kingdom. We trust that God would use what you hear today to bless and grow you so that you would be a blessing to those around you. For more information about River Life Baptist Church, go to riverlifechurch.org.au or find us on social media.
Welcome back to another episode of River Life's Going Deeper podcast. This is a continuing conversation about the deeper things of God. My name is Scott McKinnon, and I'm pretty well every single time joined by my co-host, Joe Luton.
It is true, every time.
Today we have an awesome episode up our sleeves. I'm really excited for all the listeners to have a bit of a window into someone's life today. We have the wonderful Liz Walker in the River Life studio. How are you going?
Excellent. So great to be here.
And great that you're here as part of our women's conference, just sharing some really amazing things with our community here. But your life is entirely dedicated to culture shifting initiatives that address the harms of pornography for children and young people, which sounds intense and exciting and exhausting and scary all at once. I'm really inspired and challenged by how you live your life like this. But I've got to ask, just as off the bat, what leads someone into dedicating their lives to that kind of space? Because in church world, that's a pretty kind of grey, icky area that a lot of people just don't even want to talk about, but is really real. What took you into that place?
Yeah.
Wow. Good question. So I saw pornography at the age of 6. And I saw stuff at the time which was considered, you know, incredibly graphic, but nothing compared to what children can access now. And, you know, I lived a very full life.
Read between the lines.
Read between the
lines.
I call
it working on my testimony.
Yeah, definitely.
Before Christ moments.
Yeah. Well, interestingly, I grew up in a church and grew up in a Christian home. And so a lot of my behavior went under the radar. Yeah. I was, you know, I think often Christian families have a lot of challenges, but often they go undetected.
Yeah.
And that was certainly the case.
Yeah. Wow.
In my world. And it was many, many years later when I really was already dealing with the emotional jet lag of what I'd picked up throughout my teen and adolescent years,
yes.
Young adult years. And I thought, you know, God, if you can fix me, I'll do anything. Mm. And I'm still figuring out what the anything is.
Sounds like a dangerous prayer, though.
It is a hugely dangerous prayer. And if you had have told me even 10 years ago that I would be doing what I'm doing now, I would have went, no way, I'm not even going to begin.
So how did you start on a career? This is what you do for a living. It's not a voluntary job. You're looking at porn and how you can change that and how you can reculturize people towards pretty well righteousness and towards, like, you know, God's best for them. How did you get into that world?
Yeah, well, let me clarify, it's not always looking at porn specifically.
great. Good to clarify.
Yeah. So
you have to have a pretty understanding webmaster at your place of employment, I'm sure.
Yeah, look.
Flagging searches constantly.
Exactly. There's always search terms that you're looking for and trying to contextualize what you're saying. Like, literally, I have to know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
How did I get there? Look, in 2009, I decided to write a book which incorporated some of my story, and wasn't a huge big seller or anything, but it's called Girls Just Want to Be Loved, and it's around helping teen girls understand some of the drivers behind behavior of why you would, you know, sleep around, because that was my story. Mm. And when I finished that book, I felt the Lord say to me, now I want you to write a sex education program.
Wow.
I'm like, okay. Total naivety. Then I had a sexologist come up to me and say to me, what qualifies you to write about sex? I said, well, I've got a diploma in community welfare and I've had lots of sex.
Does that qualify me?
She said no.
Oh.
But that was kind of like waving a red flag at a bull, and I went, well, okay, I will go and get qualified then.
Come on. Wow. That's awesome.
And then I went to university and did a master's in health science and sexual health. And that was huge. That was when I really decided that I needed to step outside the four walls of the church, and I really needed to take some knowledge and start reframing the way that we have these conversations. I mean, in university, pornography is celebrated as something that's sexually empowering and, you know, liberating.
Yeah.
And yet the evidence astoundingly stacks up the opposite way. And whilst, you know, we know that a lot of adults incorporate it into their lives, the negative impacts are more often than, you know, what people claim to be positive. So after I did my master's, I then ended up, it took me a long time to find my voice because, you know, going into uni and hearing them talk about pornography is empowering, it messes with your mind. You're like, what planet am I on? Like, are we on in parallel universes? Because I'm not seeing what you're seeing. So it took me a long time after that to kind of really find my voice in that.
And you're talking about, when you were saying you're going into universities, I was thinking like a college dormitory corridor. You're talking about from the lectern, like the lecturers and tutors talking about pornography being an empowering thing.
Yeah.
Wow. Yep. Not in conversations in a dorm room. No, like you're not talking about student level conversations there.
Oh, student level as well. But there was
from the lectern.
Yeah, yeah. And such a lack of critique around the impacts of pornography. So it was then I worked out that, well, firstly, I wanted to reshape the way sexuality education in general is talked about. Because at university, I looked at the difference between comprehensive and abstinence only, and primarily models out of the United States, which we know the rift between those two is massive, and there's never going to be any kind of resolve in that because you've got conservative groups up against left-wing groups. And when I looked at both of those models, I thought actually neither say what I want to say around sexuality. So I started to frame a model called holistic. Initially, I called it whole person-centered sexuality education, looking at all the different dimensions that impact the way that a person's sexuality develops, and more recently, a holistic model of sexuality.
So recently, what does that look like? You know, obviously, it's educational. What are some of the areas that you're actually teaching this and, encouraging people to kind of come and learn about the effects of pornography? What are the areas, what are the spheres that that's actually happening in?
Yeah, so my own business is Youth Wellbeing Project, and so we have the IQ programs available for students, for teachers to deliver to students.
Uh-huh, yep.
So my aim is to equip teachers to deliver the stuff in the classroom. Historically, the main focus has been on sexual health education. And more recently, we're really releasing a whole new range of units on helping schools address the impacts of pornography. And we're starting those conversations like 5-6 years old in primary school.
Wow.
Because we know that kids, as soon as they have a device, there's a chance that they can see some of the most graphic, incredibly hardcore content that's violent and it's abusive, and it's unfortunately shifted the way that young people understand sex, because porn has done a really good job of saying, well, porn is sex.
Yeah.
So that's one initiative, the school's education. Most of my work is in in church terms, we call the marketplace. I speak secular language. I am in regular education department spaces all over the sector.
Awesome.
So it's very rare, actually, that I come in and speak from a faith perspective. Yeah, that's right.
Well, and which poses a really interesting space to be working in, and probably something that a lot of people, like, because not everyone's on pastoral staff at a church like Scott and I are, so most people are actually having to wrestle with what does it mean to live out my faith effectively in the marketplace? How has it looked for you? What's that kind of the tensions that you need to manage for you, and how do you find God working in those spaces where you can't say Jesus as you walk in? You can't headline the fact that I'm doing this because God says that we are worth something, yet that sounds like it's seasoned right through everything you do. How do you navigate that space?
Yeah, look, it's been interesting from a couple of perspectives. Firstly, you know, having pastoral support in what I do is quite challenging. And I remember sitting in front of one of my pastors years ago, and he said, Liz, I just can't see how what you're doing is going to build the church.
Wow.
And I went, well, it's actually not. It's going to shift culture, though.
Wow.
And that's been an interesting journey, even understanding, and I'll speak on some of this at the women's conference, actually, the seven mountains of influence that Lance Wellnow framed. And I'm actually going to expand that a little to another model that I've been introduced, which is 10 mountains of influence. But looking at, you know, how the authority is firstly the Godhead. He releases authority to the family and then and also the body of Christ. So he works through that model into the mountains of influence in culture. And when I heard Lance Wellnow speak on the seven mountains of influence a couple of years ago, he said, you can either take them overtly or covertly. And I went, oh my gosh, I'm taking mountains covertly. Oh, this all makes sense now. And I had permission to, you know, okay, this is good. It's okay to just go out and get stuff done without necessarily coming from that faith perspective, that faith base. Because when Jesus said, go out and make disciples of nations, he's talking about look at the cultural influences, look at how we can enter into that dialogue and challenge that and reshape that and not let the world take over on that.
So good.
I love that it's the both and. And I think that's often where we fall down is like either I've got to do it covertly and you guys are not reaching people because you keep doing the church thing, or the church people go, well, if you're not explicitly leading with the gospel, then you're not doing it right. And I think when both work together, that's where we see that societal change, which is really what it's about, right?
Yeah. And I find it interesting because I went over to New Zealand back in 2015 and did a tour with the Baptist Network, Youth Network. And because it was a Baptist church that was taking me in, a lot of the people from the churches thought I was going to be speaking from a church perspective. But we were opening it up into all sorts of people, you know, school nurses and educators and counselors. And you know, the sad thing was the only people that were upset was the church people that I wasn't actually preaching the gospel, that I was actually just using research and hard science and data to unpack this for people and give them solid strategies. So I found that was quite sad that, you know, we're in that space. Well, yeah, we can effectively impact the world without actually, you know, preaching.
And I think it actually adds so much credibility to the church's presence in society and in culture when we can actually say we're dealing and we're engaged and we actually have an opinion that is valid but also helpful and actually productive for society on these things. I think it actually opens a space for dialogue for everyone.
And this isn't even a moral argument, what we're talking about with pornography. It's just not. There's so much science and there's so many harms.
Financial argument becomes a cultural argument, like infrastructure argument, just the damage and the weight on society,
It's a public health crisis. Yeah. It really is.
Wow, that's so good. Public health crisis.
It is.
Do people call it that in the world? Like, do other people explicitly say it actually is a crisis?
People in my circles do. Yeah. People, anybody who knows what's going on. But Dr. Gail Dines refers to it as a stealth public health crisis because, you know, we're not talking about it. The only people who are really talking about porn are who are supporters of porn.
Because they're making money off it.
They're making money off it. And so I, one of the things that I've done around reshaping the dialogue around pornography is often you'll hear people say, well, young people just need porn literacy, which is kind of like media literacy. They just need a way of understanding it. And so porn literacy goes into, well, how does that content make you feel? And are you okay with it? Because if you're okay with it, then it's okay. And there's no real analysis of what's going on broader from a public health perspective. So what I did is I coined the term critical porn analysis, and that looks at the impact of pornography through five different lenses. And it says, firstly, What's the influence of a multi-billion dollar global industry? Okay, in reshaping sexual behaviours.
It's huge.
Absolutely massive. They are tech first. They're early adopters, creators of technology and algorithms and targeting. I mean, if you look up on Google and you see looking for a pair of shoes, and then next time you go on Google, what are all the ads that pop up?
Totally your own shoes.
Yeah.
Right, okay. So if you go on a porn site and you happen to click on a particular video, they follow your click every step of the way and they feed you more content. So even if you see something that's like, you know, I don't want to go there, they will make sure that you go back there. And they through algorithms, they literally target users.
I've heard you say this before, that you're possibly suggesting that that method of, you know, high-tech programming that I would have no idea about, algorithms, whatever you call it, you're suggesting that the pornography industry created that or had their hand in creating that sort of thing?
I'm not specifically sure if they've created it, but they're certainly
definitely using it. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so and so we look at it, the impact of the porn industry. We look at the impact of pornography on sex, gender, power and relationships. The third lens is how pornography is linked to trafficking and sexual exploitation. Next level is how it impacts child sexual exploitation, and then mental health, addiction and physical health. So when you understand the impacts through those five different lenses, there's room for just talking about, well, you know, how do you feel about it?
Exactly right.
It's like this is a cultural crisis.
Worldwide.
Worldwide.
Well, hearing that and seeing that, you know, that's just so kind of all pervasive, and it's just like it's, I suppose, as invasive as Google and Facebook in terms of just reading your content and your data and serving things back to you. Either covertly or overtly, what are you seeing God do in that space as you and those with you who have that kingdom mindset, as you press into that space, what are you seeing God start to do in these spaces?
Well, look, I'm seeing people from all different perspectives come together on this issue.
That's awesome.
You know, because, you know, one of the people that I work with, I'm doing a conference with later in the year in Sydney, comes from a Muslim background, but he's got the AWARE campaign. And, you know, you've got radical feminists, you've got ex-porn users speaking up about it. You know, you've got a whole range of different perspectives of people saying that this is harmful. Partners of porn users that have, you know, suffered incredible trauma in their relationship. You know, parents struggling with what to do with their kids. Everybody's starting to, it's like, I think we're reaching that tipping point where the harms are undeniable and we're starting to see more of a conversation about it.
Which is so powerful, because that just raises the space for us to talk about, you know, how significant people are, and really what we would say in the church world, we're created in God's image, we have value and worth, and so this isn't a reflective of that, and so we get to actually start to sow that identity into a culture that is seemingly just happily giving it away.
Yeah.
So powerful.
So good. All right, well, with every guest that we have in the River Life studio, we love to ask a couple of questions. So just imagine, this segment is called Skipping Stones. Imagine you're down by the lake, you're having a bit of a laugh, and you're picking up rocks and you're skipping stones. We've got five little questions we're going to ask you. Number one, what would I find if I Googled you?
I'm all over the web.
Okay. Some people have nothing. So, yeah, you actually have a, you know.
I'm all over the web. And I'm not just involved with Youth Wellbeing Project either. I work with an organisation in the States from a feminist public health perspective. That's called Culture Reframed. So I develop parents' education. And I'm also involved as a founding member and now deputy chair of eChildhood in Australia.
Cool.
And so we're looking at a public health and advocacy approach to prevent children's access to pornography.
Wow. No other famous Liz Walkers that are golfing stars from South Korea or anything like that?
I think there's an artist or somewhere that's probably more famous than I am. So
there you go.
Awesome. Okay, question number two, a little left of centre. How would you describe the colour yellow to a blind person?
Bright.
Bright. Nice. Done.
Cool. stunt.
First one word answer.
I like that one. That's good.
All right. Number three. Which person in the Bible, besides Jesus, is your hero?
Rahab.
Rahab. I was going to say that. I was like, I bet you it's Rahab. I bet you it is Rahab. Oh, excellent. She's awesome.
She is. Okay. Again, a little bit unusual, but here we go. First thing that pops into your head. A penguin wearing a sombrero walks into the room right now. Why is he here and what does he say?
It's a little hot in here.
That's great. Yes.
It is a little hot in
here. It is a little hot in here, actually.
Last question.
All right, final question. What was the last book that you finished? Reading or writing. Yeah. What was the last book that you have finished?
Gender Roles by Taffy Dollar.
Cool.
There you go.
Awesome.
Excellent name for an author.
Yes.
Taffy Dollar. Come on. Taffy, that's awesome.
All right, we'll put that in the show notes. You can check that out.
Brilliant. Yeah, awesome. Brilliant. As we kind of drawn to a close here, one thing we love to ask people who are just moving outside of our space here at River Life and outside the church world, the daily grind of program and services, on a wider scale, what do you feel like God is stirring and doing in his people, maybe in our city or in our region, even prophetically, what are you kind of feeling like is in front of us in this next season? And kind of, yeah, where's God kind of challenging and calling you and us as a community?
Yeah, I'm going to lean on the words of Jane Hammond, or the teaching of Jane Hammond. She's from the States, Christian International, and she speaks about the prophetic moves of God. And what's actually happening, I believe, now is that, 2018 was 500 years since Martin Luther nailed the letter on the door. So we've got the new Reformation coming through right now. So we're on that cusp. Mm. And she was saying about right now in this season that God is restoring hope to the church so the church can restore hope to the world. And I think it goes deeper than that. I think it's all about identity, understanding our authority, who we are in Christ, that we are righteous in him. And when we understand our authority, when we can walk in our authority, whatever sphere of influence that is, we start to shift things not only in our own lives but in the lives of the people in the church, and the church becomes a beacon for hope.
Yeah.
Come on.
I think the church has lost its voice. I think potentially with Scott Morrison as our new PM that might change a little bit and people might get a little bit bolder. But I think, we're going to see a move of God, I believe, in righteousness, understanding who we are.
That's awesome.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Exciting. So exciting. It's good fun. Well, thanks so much for joining us today on this episode. If you're a River Life regular, you might actually be hearing Liz later on in the year. There might be some personal developments and workshops and things coming up. So, yeah, just keep an eye out for this. It's actually going to be incredible. We had, as a staff, we had just one short couple of hours with Liz and her team. And even as a staff, we were just so encouraged by what you're doing actually in the world. So really looking forward to that. So keep an eye out if you're listening.
So thanks so much for coming in today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolute pleasure. This has been another episode of River Life's Going Deeper, a continuing conversation about the deeper things of God. We trust that this has been informative and challenging and encouraging to you. Remember, subscribe, maybe share this around with someone who you think would be really impacted by what Liz has had to say today. And if this has brought up any issues for you today, if it's kind of triggered anything or brought some questions to mind or some stuff in your life that you need to pursue some answers and some more information, we'll put some links in the show notes and listen to the end of the podcast. You'll hear some information about how to contact River Life where we can help you out in that. So thanks for being with us, and we'll be back next week with another episode.
Thanks for listening to this River Life podcast. Make sure you subscribe to keep up to date with all the latest content. If this podcast has raised any questions for you, contact us via church@riverlifechurch.org.au or through Facebook and Instagram. Thanks for listening.